Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. It is, of course, Thursday. We're getting towards the end of the week, but we're still ploughing through at a hectic pace through football's news. And we're delving into a place that we haven't delved to yet in 2013. A place with a hidden ski resort, apparently, according to our next guest, Mr. Tom Cunder of Portugal.net, joining us today to talk all things Portuguese football. Tom, a hidden ski resort in Portugal. Surely, yeah. I'm thinking, you know, sun, sea, sand, beautiful weather.
That's right, but it's there, Serra da Estrela, the biggest mountain range in Portugal and central Portugal. So I'd implore all your listeners to come over to Portugal and spend some much-needed euros and go skiing in central Portugal.
Yeah, some very much-needed euros there, Tom. I'm sure you're keeping the Portuguese economy ticking over quite nicely. There's plenty to talk about in terms of Portuguese football. First and foremost, last time we had you on, we were talking about how Benfica and Porto are pretty much inseparable at the top of Liga Sagres, and it's still the same thing. These guys just can't be split apart.
Yeah, absolutely. That just accentuated that, the fact that they're just way ahead of everybody else. Yesterday, Porto won, and that game was the final game of the Primeira Volta, which is the first half of the Portuguese season. So everyone's played everyone. And Benfica and Porto are 10 points clear of third place Braga. So, they've just been absolutely sensational all season. Both of them, 3, lost 0. Benfica just ahead on one goal better off and goal difference. But, they've just been superb. They met each other a couple of rounds ago, and it was a superb match at the Estádio da Luz here in Lisbon. Ended up 2-2, and that really just kind of exemplifies how close they've been. It's been nip and tuck all season, and I think it's going to be like that right to the end. And the penultimate game of the season is Porto against Benfica at the Estádio do Dragão. And, we're a long way from there, but it's all heading towards an absolutely blockbuster finish to the season.
You've mentioned that, 11 days ago, Benfica-Porto faced each other in the Estádio da Luz. Tell us about that game. It was an absolutely thrilling start to it. 4 goals in 16 minutes, Tom.
Yeah, crazy. These games, they're usually quite cagey, sometimes quite fiery. Not usually too many goals in them, but that was just a crazy start. Porto went ahead early. Mangala scored a header, poor defence by Benfica. Benfica came straight back, scored an absolutely sensational equaliser from probably their player of the season so far, Matic. The Serbian has been brilliant, and it's making that deal, selling David Luiz to Chelsea for 30-odd million euros, plus Matic. It's making it look better and better. I think David Luiz is a great player, but Matic is actually maturing into a superb player. Anyway, back to the game. Benfica Porto went ahead again. Terrible mistake by the Benfica goalkeeper. And then 2 minutes later, Porto goalkeeper also had a bit of a howler. And Benfica equalised again. So, like you said, 16 minutes gone, 4 goals already. Packed crowd, 60,000 people all going crazy, thinking this has got the potential to be the greatest Clásico of all time. But calmed down a bit after that. And I suppose it reverted to the usual mode of games between these two teams, where not many chances. The best one fell to Benfica in the second half, Oscar Cardoso. And 1-1 against Elton, the Porto goalkeeper. Elton pulled off a great save, and it ended 2-2. So, I think that last chance kind of maybe exemplifies a little bit one problem Benfica has, which they came into this game in sensational form. They'd scored 20-odd goals in their previous 6 matches. But and Oscar Cardoso, especially the Paraguayan striker, had just been scoring for fun. But when that chance came right at the end, he just couldn't put it away. And against almost any other team in the league, you'd expect him to bang that into the net. And that kind of shows that I think for these really big games, I think Benfica maybe do lack a little bit of mental fortitude, whereas Porto, on the other hand, always bring their A games to their A game to these big Clásicos. Maybe they've got the slight advantage now, being as the second game will be up in Porto.
Who do you think, Tom, at the moment has the momentum out of these two sides? They're obviously both flying in the league and they had that draw 11 days ago against each other. But is there a side that you just have a feeling about maybe that is going to pip the other to the finishing line at the moment?
It's really difficult, Oliver. It's really difficult to say that because, like I just said, I've got identical records in the league. And I think if one side had come out on top from the game a couple of weeks ago, you know, that would have definitely given them a bit of a psychological advantage, but it ended as a draw. Porto, you could argue, because they've got the home game to come, have maybe in a slightly better position, but Benfica, on the other hand, also looking very strong and perhaps have got a bit more depth in their squad. I think the general consensus here in Portugal is that Benfica have probably got the stronger squad, Porto probably got the stronger starting 11. So if Porto get a few injuries, that could have a big bearing on the rest of the championship.
What about Benfica's absence now from the Champions League? Do you see them focusing 100% on Liga Sagres and ignoring the Europa League? They've got a difficult tie against Bayern Leverkusen, whereas Porto will still have the Champions League there and could lead to tiredness in the squad. And there is a strong possibility that they'll get through past this next knockout stage because they've got Malaga at the moment.
Yeah, they were quite pleased with that draw, yeah. I'm not sure, I don't think Benfica will ignore the Europa League. You know, European competition is always very important for Portuguese clubs, both the Champions League and the Europa League. But Benfica have said, and their coach, Jorge Jesus, has said that it is their number one priority to win the league this season. You know, Porto won it the last two seasons, and I don't want Porto to win it for a third season. And so I think they will definitely be focusing all their energies on winning the league. And so, for instance, if they do a bit of rotation, I wouldn't be surprised if they put out a slightly weaker side in the Europa League. Whereas Porto, like you said, in the Champions League, you know, the Champions League is the elite competition. Nobody ever puts out a weaker side in any of those matches. And again, like you said, they were quite pleased with that draw. They came second place in their Champions League group, Porto, so they could have got someone like, you know, Barcelona, Manchester United or Bayern Munich. So they were quite pleased to get Malaga, and they feel they've got a chance. And so in that respect, yes, I think maybe Benfica will have a slight advantage in that Porto, as I said, with this slightly threadbare squad. If one or two of their key players get injured, the replacements to come in aren't quite of the same quality. So that could also have a big bearing.
And you talk about key players and two standout players for Porto this season, with Jackson Martinez and James Rodriguez. Rodriguez, 21 years old, young. He's scored 7 goals this season. Looks like a very good talent indeed in Portuguese football. Is there a worry that, though, you know, the transfer window pillaging of the Portuguese league could take place once again and players could be leaving this January?
Yeah, well, we're coming to the end, aren't we? There's just 1 week left. And so I think possibly also the fact that Benfica, of course, they had a big windfall in the summer, selling Witsel and Avi Garcia for a combined total of €60 million. Mm. So that should probably keep the bank manager a little bit happy at the moment. And I think they don't actually have to sell at this moment. And probably the same for Porto, who, of course, sold Ulk for €40 million. So I think both clubs, they would be able to resist bids at the moment. James Rodriguez, you mentioned there, possibly the most valuable player in Portugal at the moment, or the one which would command the highest transfer fee. And he's actually been injured for 2 or 3 weeks. And so maybe not quite, so much in the limelight as he was earlier this season, which I suppose Porto would think is a good thing, being as we're on transfer window. Basically, I'd be quite surprised if either side sold any of their top players. Benfica just sold one of their midfielders yesterday. The deal went through. Bruno César, a Brazilian, and sold him for €5.5 million. And it's just quite a good deal, really, because he wasn't a regular by any means. Last season he had a good debut season. This season he struggled really to get playing time, And so again, that will, I think, you know, be good for their coffers, and I don't think they'll be making any more sales.
You mentioned the bank manager being very happy at both clubs after big players like Axel Witsel and Hulk going there, Tom. Is there anybody expected to be coming into the Portuguese football in general this January transfer window that we should be keeping an eye on, or anybody that could make a big splash in Liga Sagres?
Well, there's been some very interesting transfers. One of the most interesting ones is one which hasn't been made official yet, but it's expected to be made official today, possibly today or tomorrow, which is FC Porto getting the ex-Sporting striker, Lee Edson, on a six-month deal. He went back to Brazil a couple of years ago, did fairly well to start with, but I'm not sure. I think it's Flamengo where he is now, and he's terminated his contract with them. And he's come back to Porto, and as you can imagine, that has just been, the papers have been full of that the last few days, because he really is a Sporting legend. He was at Sporting for 8 or 9 years, became one of their record goal scorers, scoring 20 plus goals every season, a real folk hero here in Lisbon among the Sporting faithful. And so, you know, they really see this as a bit of a tragedy, one of their, you know, great heroes going to Porto. Porto, like we said, got Jackson Martinez, who's been on absolutely fantastic form this season. He scored 14 goals in 15 games. Some people are calling him the new Falcao. He's also Colombian, like Falcao. But the problem for Porto is if he gets injured, their backups really leave a lot to be desired. And so they've brought in Lee Edson, and it looks like he's going to sign on the dotted line. And it'd be interesting to see how he does at Porto. Of course, for Sporting fans like myself, it would be a terrible sight to behold Lee Edson banging in the goals for Porto. But that could well be happening soon. Another interesting transfer is actually one which happened within Portuguese clubs, which is one of Sporting's most talented players, Marat Ismailov, who's a Russian midfielder, also been at Sporting for quite a long time, 6 or 7 years, actually left Sporting and went to Porto as well. And so a lot of people have been making jokes in Portugal that with the likes of Moutinho and Ismailov and Lee Edson and also Varela, who was an ex-Sporting player now playing at Porto, it seems like, you know, Porto are just picking off the best Sporting have to offer to strengthen their own side.
Do you think that the gulf between the rest of the league and Benfica and Porto is providing positivity for Portuguese football in terms of having two sides that can compete with some of the best in Europe? Or is it actually being detrimental in an overall grand scheme of things because the rest of the league is just struggling to catch these two high flyers?
Yeah, that's a good question. Very good question. It's like the Spanish league, I suppose, and it is getting more and more like the Spanish league, where basically, you know, only one of two teams can win it. And that wasn't the case in Portugal until, I'd say, the last 3 or 4 years, when Benfica and Porto, really because of Sporting's demise and Braga, they've done well to come up, but really it's very difficult for them to compete just because of their fan base with the traditional big three. This gulf has really appeared, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And I think with the fact that Benfica and Porto are going to secure the Champions League places, without a doubt, for this season and probably the next few seasons, there is a danger that it will turn into like La Liga, where basically you'll have Benfica and Porto dropping ridiculously few points, like this season, and all the rest just basically playing for third place. Of course, Sporting's administration and board and fans will tell you that's not the case. It's just Sporting are going through a dip in a cycle when you go up and down, and Sporting are very much in a down phase at the moment. But, you know, if they don't get their act together soon, it's going to be very difficult for them to get on a level. And I think that's shown by the fact these good Sporting players, the best Sporting players really, don't really think twice about going up to Porto and joining them.
How are the TV rights sorted in Portugal, Tom? Because we've seen that's had a massive impact on the structure of La Liga in terms of Barca and Real Madrid, you know, getting a huge proportion of the TV money compared to the rest of the league. Is it the same in Portugal?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, that's not my specialist subject. I'm not sure exactly how it's split up. But one thing I do know is that just the actual income available from a TV is just really a drop in the ocean compared to, you know, the Premier League and La Liga. It is you know, an important source of income, but really can't be compared to, you know, other leagues where it is perhaps one of the most important factors.
Do you think the, because there was the mention a while back now of, you know, seven places being given to Champions League football and a big expansion of the Champions League incorporating the Europa League spots into its makeup. Is this something, when it was talked about, is this something that Portuguese football teams and fans were for, or were they against it? Because it would, in theory, help to reduce that gap between the rest of the pack and Benfica and Porto.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I'm not sure, really. I think that's maybe a bit more question of what people think about the actual Champions League format and the European, you know, or the ex-European Cup. Should that be a competition just for the very best throughout Europe? Or and also there is a danger, of course, if you open it up too much, that the actual Champions League would just be basically a competition for the strongest leagues, maybe with just English and Spanish and one or two Italian clubs, maybe, and German clubs getting to the latter stages every season. So it's got pros and cons. I think Portuguese clubs have achieved so much success over the last 10 years in both the Champions League and the Europa League that, to be honest, I think they'd be quite, you know, a lot of people wouldn't be too displeased if they just kept it more or less the same.
You mentioned Sporting Lisbon earlier, and they're having an absolutely torrid season in front of goal at the moment. Only 14 goals in the first 15 games of the year. Do you expect to pick up from Sporting, languishing down in eighth place, a side that you really would, in Portuguese football, historically expect to see up there with Benfica and Porto?
Yeah, it's their worst season ever, literally, in at the halfway stage. They've never been this low. They've never got this few points. They've never scored this few goals. And having said that, they, like you said, they have picked up a little bit. They've won their last three games, last two league games and a League Cup game since they changed their manager. They're on their fourth manager this season. But it's the Josualdo Ferreira, who's a veteran coach, very well-respected Portuguese coach. He was at Porto for four seasons. He actually won the league three seasons in a row in the middle part of the first decade of this century, and he was he's actually the only Portuguese coach to ever have won three titles on the row. And so you know, he's a very well respected coach, a very good coach, and he seems to have steadied the ship. And I think there's no doubt that Sporting will have a better second half of the season to the first half. It's really inconceivable that they will you know, do as badly again. Having said that, they're a long way from third place now. I think they're 11 points from Braga in third. And so it's quite unrealistic. I can't see them overhauling them to get the other Champions League spot, or which actually gives right to Champions League qualifying. And the main aim for Sporting now is just getting into the Europa League, which is fourth or fifth place. But even though they're down in eighth at the moment, I'd be quite surprised if they don't end up fourth or fifth, because even though they've had this disastrous first half of the season, they have got quality players, and now they've got a coach who I think can probably get the best out of them. So I think that Sporting will definitely be, you'll be seeing an improvement from them in the next few months.
Tom, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show here in 2013. We always enjoy getting into a bit of Portuguese football with you whenever we have you on. Just quickly, we've been asking all of our journalist friends from around Europe about the traditions that take place on New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in their respective countries. What about Portugal? Is there any weird traditions? We heard about the grape eating from Ben Hayward on the stroke of midnight in Spain. Is there anything like that at all, mate?
Yeah, well, that's similar in Portugal. I don't know. It's actually raisin eating. Yeah, you eat 12 raisins, make a wish for every raisin you eat on Christmas Eve. Apart from that, I suppose one of the main differences I notice coming from England to Portugal is that at Christmas, the big celebration is Christmas Eve. It's not actually Christmas Day. Christmas Eve is when the whole family gets together. They have what's called the consuada, which is like a kind of midnight feast, and where you have your codfish, bacalhau, and just an inordinate amount of food is put on the table, and people just eat and eat and eat. And then you exchange the presents at midday, at midnight, you know, and which is quite different, at least from what I was used to in England, where the, you know, the main celebration was actually on Christmas Day. Apart from that, I'd say basically it's just another excuse for doing something which Portuguese people love, which is eating lots, drinking lots, and just having a good time.
And there's no been there's not been any incidences of players attacking ball boys in Portugal, I hope, as well, Tom.
No, I don't think so. No, it hasn't got that bad yet.
Excellent stuff. Very glad to hear it. And long may it continue. Thanks so much for joining us, mate. It's a pleasure to have you on. And we look forward to getting you back on later in 2013, mate.
Excellent. Thanks, Oliver.
Take care, man. Have a very good few weeks before we get you back. Tom Cundo there from Portugal.net joining us here on World Football Daily on the show, taking us through all things Liga Sagres. Just baffling. I mean, no losses for either Benfica or Porto. 39 points.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.